got that nerd rage. Nerd rage. I got that nerd rage. Nerd rage.
From comics and games to movies and TV, this is the Nerd Show on 1310 KFKA.
Nerd rage.
Nerd rage.
Now here are the nerds.
Good evening. You're listening to The Nerd Show on 103.1 and 1310 KFKA. In the Allo Communications studios, we've got Micah behind the glass, Scott right next to me, and me, Nick Kenny, is your hosts for tonight's Nerd Show.
Woohoo!
And guess what? We're going to record.
Whoa.
We're going to review two good shows.
Yay!
And no bad shows.
That sounds like a plan. I like it.
Yes.
Well, and maybe before we start reviewing shows, we could talk about some of the stuff that has come out this week. The trailer for Ant-Man and Quantumanium is out, and it's actually pretty good. And we see Kang the Conqueror.
Ooh, I haven't seen this yet.
Yeah, so it's actually really good. And we have all the originals back. You know, we get Hope. The Van Dynes, but we get Michael Douglas back, and then we get the lady who played his wife. And again, I'm blanking on all this.
Boy, what a wonderful start. It sounded like my frazzled brain, too.
You sound like me.
I watched it, and I was like,
is that Michelle Pfeiffer?
Really good. I believe it is.
Pfeiffer.
Yes. And now it's like there's chaos in the quantum realm, and you know, Scott's daughter actually creates a little signal to ping out there. And
oh, yeah, she's an adult now.
Yeah, and Michelle Pfeiffer's like, don't do that! And then, of course, she does it. And it's like, there's something I forgot to tell you. And they all get sucked into the quantum realm. And Kang is, like, offering to help them out, but he needs their help with something. So it's very interesting to see where that's going to go. And I'm excited for it.
Is there going to be a Loki tie-in for this?
There could be. I don't know. I thought one of the funniest parts of the whole thing is you see Scott Lang walking down the street, and he's like getting high fives from the folks at Baskin-Robbins because, you know, Baskin-Robbins always finds out, but they're definitely going to benefit from the fact that they had Ant-Man working for him at one point in time. And then he's walking out of a store, and they're like, thanks, good to see you again, Spider-Man. And he's just like devastated because he's, you know, of who he is. But it looks really good. I'm excited about that. Looking forward to it. We've got Black Panther that comes up here just in like less than two weeks.
Yeah.
It's going to be so good. And then
I'm so excited for that.
Well, I'm enjoying
I'm just going to say this now. I don't think it can be as good as the first one, no matter how good it is. I don't think it's possible to be as good as the first one.
Now, when you set it up that way, you're not giving it a chance. You're already like making a preconceived notion that it's not going to be as good, no matter how good it is.
I'm setting my expectations low, so that hopefully it will blow me out of the water.
I still think it'll be great, and I'm really excited about that. And then maybe might get to see Black Adam in the next couple of days, so we could talk about that next week. We'll see what happens.
Maybe it will blow Aqua City out of the water. I don't know where those guys are from.
All I'm hoping is that it's better than the reviews that I've seen initially come out of some of the previews, because it is really getting its butt kicked on social media about how bad it is. So
yeah,
wait, do people not like the trailer, or is the movie out and people aren't liking
the movie?
The
movie's out.
Black Adam, right?
Black Adam is out.
Oh, Black Adam. I'm sorry. I thought we were.
I thought we were talking about
Black Panther.
No, we're excited for Wakanda Forever, but we may go see Black Adam.
Yes, so we can review it
next week. And I'm hopeful that it's better than it's being reviewed, because it's being reviewed terribly.
You know, I'm a fan of Dwayne Johnson, Dwayne The Rock Johnson, but to me, he plays the same character all the time. And I know we get that a lot with especially big top names like him, like Bradley Cooper. But I'm hoping this one's a little different. I hope he's not just like the typical Rock actor in a Marvel setting.
Well, and I think, DC, let's be clear.
DC, yes, yeah, I'm sorry.
Don't mix your genres there. You're going to get hate mail.
Yes, but it's already flying in.
You know,
that was quick.
Yeah, wow, already. it's a good thing people don't know where you live. No, just kidding. But I think the idea with The Rock doing this is that there is an opportunity for him to be kind of this anti-hero, you know, that he's really not this good guy, altruistic. He's a really ticked off individual, and we're going to see what happens with it. I just have heard that they haven't done anything new or unique, and it feels like that they have literally just like picked up one superhero out of the DC universe and they plucked in a new one. And
well,
and
you know, to me, it's odd because they were the leaders. You know, look back at the 90s, DC was leading. You know, the Batman films and the franchises, and I don't know what happened. We could certainly spend some time on that, but I'm not nearly well educated enough for DC and Marvel. But even, you know, Black Adam, if you have an anti-hero, that's what I want to say Daredevil, but it's not Daredevil. Deadpool. You know, they're just kind of picking the things that worked for Marvel and took off and got a lot of fan recognition and fan service. Wonderful. But where's the originality? Where's something new? Hopefully, and I don't want to wish ill upon Discontinued or DC. Because we do like to see, you know, really good nerdy movies and content, but they've not found their groove.
No.
I think what they've been trying to do, and the DC head just left Warner Brothers. So he's been working with Warner Brothers since 2008. He's been doing the DC stuff since 2008. I think it's probably a good thing maybe that their 10-year plan, you know, has someone else.
Hasn't started yet.
Yeah. Well, this is I don't know if this is a part of their 10-year plan. If it's as bad as a lot of people are thinking, because right now the critics also seem to hate it.
Well, it could be a hard thing for looking back at some of the things that have come out the past decade from DC. They don't have a lot of top named actors or actresses portraying Superman or Wonder Woman. Like, they're good, but they weren't like a Robert Downey Jr. was, you know, when they brought him in for Iron Man, which is nice because you get to see them kind of create and be, you know, not maybe a character that fans already would have had envisioned for them. So it gives them a cool chance, but I don't think they had that buy-in of that kind of fandom, you know.
Well, they don't really need that for Superman. I mean, Superman's already known. Iron Man was probably more known to a lot of people for the song.
But I mean,
Iron
as an
Man.
Actor, like, they're not really connected to the actors as much as you would be with what I've seen happen with Marvel.
Oh, yes. I think there's been a big push for most of the actors in the DC universe to separate themselves from the characters that they're playing instead of embrace them for a 10 or a 12-year period like we saw with all of the actors that signed on to do things within mm-hmm. the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And so I see what you're saying there. And it is difficult because you don't have this opportunity to create some continuity along that and the build on it. And I think what we're seeing Marvel do is as they get into these new phases, you see some of the characters phase out. Some of the characters kind of go away like we saw with Tony Stark. But you've got your next iteration that you were building up in the phase before it that now get to kind of take over the mantle for the next phase. And so you've got a churn, for lack of a better word, of really good talent playing really good characters. And they're
in some
sticking
cases.
With it. In most cases. I think in most cases with the MCU.
I would like to see how they – now they're going to replace Iron Man with Riri Williams, and they're going to introduce her in Black Panther.
Who?
Riri Williams. She's like really smart person.
Okay, but it's not Tony Stark.
Yeah.
So they're not recasting that. They are continuing along kind of that Iron Man.
Yeah, they're replacing of Iron Man.
Yeah, Iron Man is going to become another character, or the person inside the suit is going to be a new character. And I like that. I like what they're doing. I like their with going with it. And I think to your point, Micah, you've got good characters as an Iron Man that you can put someone else in the suit, and as long as you do a good story behind it, it will do well.
Yeah,
well, I think.
As long as they don't try to throw the She-Hulk,
yeah,
because there's been a lot of that real goofy stupidity lately, and a lot of these shows have just been. It feels like they're pointless.
Campy. It's very campy. It's not like, you know, when I remember the uproar that WandaVision had in those first two episodes because fans were so confused at what they were watching, and then rewatching that now, Marvel's taken on a different approach to silly, I think, with these TV series. I mean, that was silly having the different sitcoms and the eras, but when you got to see the whole episode or season, wow, that all fit really nicely.
And you know what? I didn't think about it till you just said it, but that was one of those where at the end of it all, it made sense and mm-hmm. it was really well done and it was really thoughtful. I don't think we saw that with She-Hulk.
Right.
I think at the end of it, we're kind of like going,
Oh, wait, did she rewrite her story?
Yeah.
She didn't deserve to rewrite her story. Yeah. She's no fun. By the way, I found out that those fourth wall breaks were necessary because she's been doing it in the comics. So she's been doing the fourth wall breaks in the comics before Deadpool. This was just executed really poorly. I think some of it may be the actress. Some of it is just poor writing.
And sometimes you get beat to the punch.
Yeah. And, not everybody is a Ryan Reynolds, and his personality fits for that.
Agreed.
Tough. Well, we're going to come back and review the latest episode of Andor and the season finale of House of the Dragon. So stay tuned for more of the Nerd Show as we get nerdy. Welcome back to the Nerd Show. Scott, Micah, Nick here talking previously about what's coming up over the next several months. And now we get to dig into, Andor. Episode 7. Of course, this one did not have as much action as we had seen last week. But of course, if you were expecting more action, you don't know the ebb and flow of a TV show and how they can build up that grit and that tension. And we had a lot of that this episode. A lot of underlying currents and tones from almost every character that was featured.
Yeah, you had... And we're seeing this, and we'd heard about it before, this kind of this three-show arc where we really get into a story and we dig into it. And now we're starting to see, Cyril and his life, and he hates his life and how much he's hating his life. And now he's in the Standards Bureau within the machine that is the Empire. And the part for me that I love is the continued buildup of the ISB.
By the way, I had chills, and I watched with subtitles because, it just helps me to, understand what's all being spoken, especially with the British accents.
Oh, yeah.
Plus, this helps me to practice my British accent. But almost took it away from me. It did, I will say, because when the first speaking happened, I saw Yularen's name, was like, oh my gosh, this is fantastic. Colonel Wolf Yularen, who was he was an ISB, but he worked with the clones, he worked with Obi-Wan and
But we
Anakin.
See him briefly, and that's the guy in the white tunic on the Death Star.
Oh yeah, I don't think
there.
He has a line at all.
He doesn't.
He's a scary guy. If you get into the Star Wars lore, he's, I think, the head of ISB.
He is.
And he is not a guy to be trifled
no.
with. So for him, it was so cool, but I know that build up and it ruined it for me by seeing his name, in the script.
Why did it ruin for you? I mean, the moment I saw his face, I knew who
I know,
it was.
But they didn't show his face for the first, 20 seconds or so. So you kind of see, okay, who's talking, but it said Yularen, and then I knew it. I was like, oh man, this is such a cool build. I wish they just hadn't put his name on who is speaking when they're
Disney's,
not on the
Disney's
camera.
Having problems with that as of late. They've done that a couple times. They did that in She-Hulk. I don't know, maybe if we go back and watch it this week if they've changed it, but they did that in She-Hulk as well. Where
they need some angry nerds to go through and watch that first
exactly.
and go, no!
How do we get on
you
there?
You got
do
it wrong!
Yet. Yeah, just ominous voice speaking, and then you see his face and you do it. That was cool.
And then you show, you got a little sense of that with the Senate in the previous episode of what that attack meant. But now you saw the fist of the Empire coming down.
No, not the fist of the Empire. This is the full
boot. It is.
Both boots of the Empire. They are overreacting. They are taxing every system that may hide a rebel of some kind. I mean, they're going all out.
Well,
they
how extreme are they going to be?
Pissed.
What if you come across somebody who used to live on Tatooine, but now you used to live on Tatooine, so now we're going to tax you 40%.
I don't know, but I love the fact that they're playing exactly into the quote-unquote, we can call them now, the rebels' hands. That's exactly
what
they want
them to do.
Whose hands
is it? Because I love the interaction between Mon Mothma and Luthen, because she was ticked off that this happened, and he was, the back and forth of what did you think this was going to be?
Like, there was no turning back. Mm-hmm. I told you this, and I love that. I love that it's a little bit disconnected. It's disjointed. It's the early throes of a rebellion, and you've got different people who are starting to come together in this like cause. You know, and even like that whole exchange back and forth between the senator from Chandrila and Mon Mothma, you know, he's like, well, I'm not really sure that you would appreciate my take on politics or my political stance or whatever it was. And then after she like has to beat him over the head with where she's coming from and all of this, and the look on his face is kind of like, oh, geez. And she's like, I'm not really sure that you're able to put up with my political stance. It was so good in that.
As the great Michael Scott would say, oh, how the turntables.
Yes.
This is the dialogue once again in this show is so far above so many other shows. Game of Thrones was like this. House of the Dragon is also really, really good. But I really like what they're doing in Andor. Because it doesn't sound like Planet Earth speak. It sounds different enough, and it's so good. It's not cliche. You don't get a lot of those. You don't get a lot of those Lucasisms.
I'm curious. Like she tells the senator from Chandrila, you know, that her husband can't be trusted. Now, does that help to paint a picture that Mon Mothma is not, you know, good of giving him a chance of the trust? What kind of relationship do they have? Because it almost paints him to kind of be a bad guy, but also her to be a bad guy by not including him. I mean, it's crazy the politics that are involved and the family dynamics.
Yeah, I think it's quite different. What I think is going on is he's riding her coattails, man. He is enjoying life in the center of the universe, being the husband of a very well-known senator.
And wealthy.
Wealthy. And he gets to enjoy all of those things in life. And he kind of just, you know, little pet projects here and there. And he just seems like someone who is enjoying the spoils and the fruits of someone else's labor. And I think that's really where it's coming from. It's the whole concept of, you know, she's playing a very dangerous game. We talk about that with Game of Thrones, but it's similar in this regard. And he would upend it because it puts their station at risk. Mm-hmm. And he likes the quiet, safe regards of being on Coruscant and being a senator's husband.
Are you saying he's a trophy husband?
I think so.
Is he a gold digger?
I don't know about gold digger, but I think he definitely would fit the bill of a trophy husband, and I like that.
I do too. I got that immediately. Just from the look at the guy, I'm like, oh, this is a beta male. This dude is useless. This guy doesn't really have a job.
He doesn't. Yeah.
He's just... at least work at fast food, buddy.
Well,
come on,
what's
be useful.
What's Mon Mothma going to do? I'm most curious to see her story pan out during this series, because we know in Rogue One and in Return of the Jedi, where she's leading the second attack on the Death Star, that she doesn't have a husband or daughter.
Well,
so,
we never see them.
Right.
It's never mentioned, and I could see them playing that up specifically to be that there's going to come a time, because we think about it, where... you know, she talks about in Rogue One that, you know, what she's doing in the Senate, and we know between then and, you know, the beginning of A New Hope that,
20
you know, it's been, you know, the Senate has been abolished and been, you know, is no longer effective. And so she's still involved, 6 years later as part of the rebellion and doing some work. And so I have a feeling what we might get into is how her family unit just dissolves. I have a feeling her husband and daughter are going to run away and disown her. And
Emperor is going to come after them. And what peril does she put them in by leading the rebellion?
Yeah.
I think House husband finds out and I think he's going to betray her.
I'm glad
you guys mentioned this. This was an episode full of so much.
Yeah, and it was a lot to unpack. You know, it was even emotional with Andor and his mom.
Yeah.
I love that he called her Ma. I think that's the first time he called her Ma.
And then we also get the understanding of his dad.
And that was Aunt Petunia, by the way, from Harry Potter. She's a lot more motherly in this series than she was in Harry Potter.
Yeah. But we see that. We see the clones marching down the street, you know, years before, and his dad.
Named Clem.
Yeah, Clem literally trying to stop the guys from going after the troops, and it ends up costing him his life. Mm-hmm. And her to kind of basically regain that sense of understanding and what she needs to be and saying where she's going to stay is there to help this rebellion, because she recognizes it before Cassian really, really has become a part of it, knowing full well that's what he's all about.
Well, and all of his goodbyes were very rushed, you know, with his little gal pal.
Yeah.
You know, he was very okay with, oh, this is it. This is the end of good luck in life.
But she was kicking him out. She's like, you can't be here. You shouldn't be here. You need to go.
And he recognized that quick, too.
It's like, nobody here is going to stand by you because they all blame you for what's happened.
Yeah.
Even though it's kind of still his fault because he's involved in the thing, the garrison break. They don't realize how much he's involved, but they still blame him.
Yeah. Yeah.
One thing before we go to break, I want to say I was wrong about Cyril. I thought that Cyril was a true believer, which is the most dangerous person. I think he is equally as dangerous, but he's a person who currently has no belief. He has no belief in himself. He's like basically a blank slate. He's searching for a purpose. And I think he's about to find his purpose.
I
think he's going to be a bad guy.
Oh, yes. Then I agree with you wholeheartedly.
I think he's about to find his purpose, and it's going to be a bad purpose. I think he's going to be one of those evil guys who's deep in the government.
He's got hate in his heart.
He does.
Oh, he does. He could, if he was a Sith, he would be a very powerful Sith.
Well, because it's building, too. You know, he's blaming Cassian for him losing his job, then blaming Cassian for him being stuck on Coruscant with his mother, and probably him blaming Cassian for him having the job he has now. That's going to build and build and build. I'm excited to see where that fuel. And his mom doesn't help either. She's a piece of work.
At least he has a job.
Will we find out who the uncle is by the end of this next 3-episode stint?
I don't think so. I think we're going to not find out until maybe the season finale or maybe not at all.
Gosh. Well, stay tuned for more of The Nerd Show as we dig in to the season finale of House of the Dragon. We'll be right back.
I hope it's Uncle Palpatine.
Welcome to The Nerd Show on 103.1 and 1310 KFKA here in the Allo Communications Studios in downtown Greeley. Our next two segments are all going to be wrapping up House of the Dragon. We had episode 9? 10.
This is episode 10.
10.
The Black Queen.
Yes. Right after last week's Green Queen, as a focus on Alicent and the Hightowers. Gosh.
Oh.
Just... wow. Words? Anyone? Where's my script? Anyone got a script?
I don't.
I think wow describes it, but mind-blowing also describes it. There are a lot of things in this. This was about as good as last week's episode, except for one part. The last 2 minutes just really threw it over the top.
Yeah.
And makes you go, oh, well, this cliffhanger kind of sucks. I have to wait. Yeah. I don't know when the next
two
season.
Years.
2 years?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
2024.
I am reevaluating my
entire That's the thing.
Between
the Lord of the Rings, so the Rings of Power and this, it's just like, wow, we have such good content. Why can't we go back to the days where they, you know, studios just throw a bunch of money and they made 3 movies like Lord of the Rings back to back to back? We had them every December. I know that's not how it works right now. But what a season finale of House of the Dragon. You know what I love so much? There's still so much more story to be told. We're just seeing, I mean, that last look that Rhaenyra has to the camera was shocking. We know it's on. And it was sad that it happened the way that it did.
It was. Definitely saw it coming.
Yes.
I didn't see it coming the way it did until he leaves. And the moment he leaves and it's raining, it's like, oh, this is not going to go well for him. And I knew that there was going to be a dragon showdown.
Yeah.
Wasn't
even a showdown.
No, it wasn't.
I mean,
you
have...
I loved how he kind of went down into the canyons. He figured out that he was small, and that's what he should have done. It's like, you know, you were a messenger and everything else. And then what does he do? He picks a fight with a bigger opponent, and he gets...
Well, he doesn't.
No, his dragon does.
Well, his dragon does, but...
He's trying to calm it down. They both are because they lose control of the dragons.
They both do.
And that goes back to the first episode where Viserys tells Rhaenyra, it's an illusion
yeah.
that they have control of the dragons. It's like the a line from Jurassic Park where Dr.
Yeah.
Sadler's like, this is all an illusion.
Yeah.
You have no control.
It's a game. Yeah.
And it's true. And you have a young dragon who's been attacked and antagonized, and he's just snaps at one little, oh my gosh. Mm-hmm. And they're both panicking. Both Aemond and
yeah.
Lucerys are panicking because they lost control of their dragons. And that was right when you think it was, oh, well, yeah. it was a gut-wrenching. That was,
oh.
wow.
Yeah, when you see Aemond trying to hold the dragon back, mm-hmm. and he's like, you know, no, 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 and just chomps it.
Chomps it, and all you see are the wings and
a
little bit of flesh.
Down,
it was like seeing a bird take a moth, and that's all you have left.
Yeah,
you know,
this, it was great.
That was, if that's what we're going to get for the series of the Dance of the Dragons, I am stoked, yeah. because every scene of the dragon with Daemon in the pit singing Old yeah. Valyrian was stunning and yeah. horrifying and haunting.
So I was trying to figure out, is that one of the wild dragons?
They think it's the one that belonged to Jacerys, who was the king who passed away
yeah,
and gave
okay.
it to Viserys.
I think
that was his dragon, which is bigger than Vhagar, I think.
Yeah, I believe you're correct. That is the biggest dragon.
And it's also the only one that's seen war.
Yeah.
Yes. And I saw the look in their eyes, and they kind of match up. And so,
wasn't that cool with
go.
Daemon? And like, does that you know? I like the poetry of does that Daemon's inner fire?
Yeah,
because they had a scene, and that was haunting, where he choked Rhaenyra.
Oh yeah,
and
that was
what the hell, dude?
That I was
that makes me
worried.
Hate him now.
I know.
Well, and you know, I was looking on Twitter and what the showrunner was writing about, and that was, I mean, his message to Rhaenyra, which was, you can't win by being nice
yeah.
because your dad did not win anything. Look at
yeah.
what the realm is now because your dad was basically a pacifist trying to keep everyone calm. But I do admire Rhaenyra for being that voice this entire episode when everyone else wants to go to war.
Well, and we see Rhaenys say that, and I love that scene in the bedroom when you've got Lord Cordis and he's recovering and he gets all angry and she's like, she is the only one holding the realm together right now.
Mm-hmm.
She is the voice of reason when everybody else is trying to charge headlong into it. And I'm going to just say right now, Eve Best is like my favorite actor, actress on the planet right now. I am seriously going to go and figure out and watch everything that she's ever done and find a way to watch it, because that woman is phenomenal.
She didn't bend the knee.
No.
Did you see that?
Oh,
and then
yeah.
they finally pledged. That was powerful. Now, was that because
but she
couldn't? Because she's not Lord Corlys?
She said that Lord Corlys will make the decision on where
That's
our
right.
allegiance will be with our house. And you see that she didn't bend the knee, so she's not mm-hmm. going to do it. But she also never said no. And she guided Corlys to that decision. And then she went all in. She's like, I will take mm-hmm. Vhagar and I will patrol this area.
Hey, guys.
It was amazing.
Mayleese.
Sorry. Yeah.
I hate to say this, but I think she's one of those people who's a lot smarter than we think.
Oh,
and
big
I think she could be mm-hmm. an enemy to the throne in the future. I think she probably really should have been the queen from the beginning.
Well, that's, yeah, and I love her leadership. I love her character development. You know, a lot of Twitter fans were ripping her apart for not killing Alicent and Aegon. And
no,
I
she
like
did
how
the right
she
thing.
Defended it. She goes, this isn't my war to
she
start.
She said, this is not my war to begin.
So yep. I love
and
how they
yeah,
checked that off.
It would have begun a war.
Yeah.
And
well, yeah,
it was
very smart of her not
that.
To do so.
Yeah.
And also what they did,
fans
which I
dumb.
Admire, you know, for her saying, hey, this is not my war to start. Well, I lost my train of thought. I was
oh,
going.
Oh, man,
I
you were going somewhere.
It was going to be good. It'll come to me.
I have been so impressed with that actress and with the character that she plays and how well she plays it. And I think Micah's onto something. She is far and away the smartest, most strategic mind of anybody that we've seen in this series, and they are doing that so well, and she plays it perfectly.
Watch out for anyone who sits in the, well, maybe Larys might be her equal.
No,
but
no,
watch
gosh,
out for anyone.
Close. Nope.
No.
Nope.
Watch out for anyone who sits in the shadows and observes.
Yeah,
well,
I mean, you
curious.
See her most of a lot of the times you see her, she's just sitting by someone's side, or she's just sitting and
waiting.
Yeah.
She's observing.
She is smart, and that's why she's my second favorite character right now.
You know, I'm curious how this will play out, because you clearly have Targaryens versus Targaryens. But I don't know. I think that family bond might be their biggest strength between Rhaenyra and Rhaenyse.
Oh, yeah.
I don't see Rhaenyse, well, right now, flip-flopping and being manipulative. I see her getting to the ends of a mean to where her kids come into power somehow. I see the other families, the other houses, the Lannisters, the Starks, the Baratheons. I see them being pivotal for this family civil war.
Which is essentially what it is. We heard a new, you know, Stark mention in Winterfell, and so we've got some opportunities for expansion in the next season. I've read that they are not going to have the big time jumps in the next season, so we will get a more established story throughout. So we'll see some elements that are going on there. And I think what we're learning through this is that the writers of the show are staying mostly true to the book, but they are not afraid to deviate from it. And so some of the things that people have started to already speculate on, this is coming in season two, this is what we're going to see. I don't think we can count on that.
Well, I like how the story is told through maesters, and it's opinionated of what, you know, oh, well, we think Rhaenyra was a warmonger, so she started this war. Well, no, that was their impression, and it's going to be biased on whoever's family they support. So I love that they kind of use that very loose storytelling to be able to expand and enhance that story and to keep viewers on the edge, because I would not want to read this book and know everything that's going to happen next. That just doesn't sound thrilling to me.
Nope.
The thing that's I admire about the character development, I know it hurt them to do a lot of fast forward and type jumps. I know it hurt audience. They didn't feel like they got connected enough with the characters, but I think they did with what they accomplished this first season to really build it up. I can't see it ending any other way.
This season,
and that build up. And sure, we could have had a few more episodes, but was that really necessary? Did people not feel connected to Viserys? Well, why? He wasn't a character that you really loved. He was scared.
He served a purpose, and we went along to watch what was going to happen throughout that process, and it was good. I mean, this story is really about the Hightowers and the Targaryens and their battle for the crown and the Iron Throne. And
ooh,
that's what's going to happen. That's what we're going to see. And we heard about that before, that it's going to be about the kids. So
for those who are upset that, oh, it was a misconception of Alicent hearing the king the night he died. Well, whether she heard that or not about his, you know, kind of lunacy toward the end, the small council still would have gone with Aegon.
They were
so
going
we have these events regardless of Alicent hearing Viserys that night. But that's what we have one more segment to talk more about House of the Dragon. So stay tuned to more Nerd Show. You are listening to The Nerd Show, 103.1 and 1310 KFKA, recapping The Black Queen, The House of the Dragon season finale. Spoiler alert, Rhaenyra's middle son, Lucerys, is dead.
No! Middle strong and, son.
You know,
middle
and,
strong son. I loved how they made that reference, how Aegon says that to him. It's like...
Oh, gosh. It's so... You know, I love this. This is Game of Thrones at its finest. This is storytelling at its finest. This is just like Game of Thrones, where you're like, wow, I hate that decision, but it was the right one to make for this character. Daemon is terrifying. He wants a war, but I love, you know, I hated it when he choked her. I was like, what the heck? This is not okay. Like, she needs to, like, lop his head off, you know?
I was yelling at the screen.
He's showing her, like, force, and he's right. You have to be forceful and, again, that was horrible. I will not condone any kind of behavior like that, but Daemon's still a wild card to me. He still gives me uneasy vibes because he just wants to go out and start chopping people's heads off.
Well, and yeah, just keep going.
And what I love, you know, when she came in, when Eric, with an A, brought the crown, I thought was phenomenal. Just phenomenal. I mean, it gave me chills. That powerful moment of that birth scene was hard and heavy and heartbreaking.
I didn't watch that scene.
I mean, it was, that was sad. That was powerful.
That's one of those turn away from the screen and wait for it to be over.
Well, and it shows how much of a badass, I hope I can say that on air, that Rhaenyra is.
Oh,
and
she
for
is
them
badass.
To have that power, I mean, the music was powerful, and then he shows up with the crown, and they hail her as the queen. For Daemon to challenge the Knight's Hand, Knight's Guard, King's Guard.
King's Guard.
You know, with the dragon, I thought was epic. And then, you know, for Hightower to come back and for Rhaenyra to do what she did early on in the series, to a show of force when she took the dragon egg from Daemon. I mean, this was well-crafted, good storytelling. And for her to, you don't know that you're gonna have if you're going to have the Starks or the Baratheons available. Like, she is a wise leader. She is so much smarter than her dad was, and I think she's a lot smarter than Leads On. And I think, like Rhaenys sees that. She didn't see that with Alicent. Alicent was a pawn from her dad. And, I think she's going to be a great advisor, which was cool when Rhaenyra walks in, she kind of just nods at who her council is going to be. And it's Rhaenys's granddaughters.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was pretty fantastic, too. They are going to be the future leaders of whoever, you know, gets the Iron Throne.
Well, they're going to step in and do that. And there are so many elements within the show that they've continued to do well. They continue to play off of. And even they have these little hints. I mean, we've talked about the Baratheons. They show up. I thought it was interesting that that's the one they showed. Obviously, some of that was there. But they do that because there is history that the Baratheon descendant, Robert Baratheon, is the one that goes and hunts down and tries to get rid of all the Targaryens. And so there's this element of bad blood that's already there. And so you see this guy who is just a pompous butthead.
Well, you know, he has a good point, too. When he goes, he's like, Why are you taking my father's words? When his father, you know, we don't know that story with the Baratheons, but it's like, oh, yeah. So loyalty means nothing right now. What are the Starks going to do? What are the how are the Hightowers going to bring them in?
The Baratheons have always kind of been like that. Yep. I mean, take a look at the sons of
Stannis and the other one.
Yeah.
Stannis
and the guy who got killed too early.
By the Dark Monster?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That was interesting. The smoke monster. It reminds me of Lost.
That was a good episode.
You know, I want to say, and this had a lot of Walking Dead vibes to me, where they introduced Lucerys and you kind of got an attachment for him. Smart kid, smarter than you know, really wants you to be. Hey, I can't lead. I'm seasick. How can I do this? You know, I'm not as strong as you, mother. And that was just kind of poetic.
He's not
there.
Alive as you, mother, either.
not anymore. But I loved him, and he behaved perfectly. I mean, you saw Jace, and you thought, oh, shoot. He's going to be the one who wants to get in a fight and pick a fight. So it was just poetic that Lucerys is the one who goes to Aemond. I mean, he sees Vhagar. I'd have been like, nope, come back next week when that's open. But he still had the cojones at 13 years old to go and still give his peace to Lord Baratheon. And he was fearful. He was terrified. Him speaking Old Valyrian, which he couldn't, you know, he was teaching his older brother that a couple of episodes ago. Just showed how good of a mind he had, and he knew he was scared. His dragon sensed he was scared, which is why he lost control, where Aemon lost control of Vhagar, because Vhagar is a beast, and like some twerpy kid's going to be able to control a dragon like that.
Right.
I'm excited for so much more, because that was awesome that they lost control like that. I mean, it wasn't awesome. We saw what happened. And even the final moments, you knew that they were going to lose. But the way and manner in which, like, oh, safe. Go! Why are you stopping? Why are you slowing down? Just go! That was heartbreaking. Just sad. Because that kid did such a great job of portraying that character. He would have been a tremendous leader. And you saw, I mean, there were no words spoken in the last 2 minutes of that episode. And that was so powerful, Rhaenyra's response. No words, and you just saw it in her face, like, it's on. We are at war.
Yeah, how about Emma D'Arcy? Wow. Great acting. Great acting in the entire episode by pretty much the entire
everybody.
Cast. And I have to say, so the guy who plays Aemon, who I said looks like the lead singer of a European band, which he still does. Like, that guy, great actor. I think that character is going to be probably a better king than his brother, who's
absolutely
just a Joffrey, just thinks with his general groinal region, only wants to be loved, whereas Aemond would actually rule, would actually use his brain on the Iron Throne. Now, what he would use his brain for may not be a good thing.
Now, we're looking, you know, and I don't know the lineage, and I don't really want to read the book to know where Daenerys falls in line from which Targaryen, but you're kind of seeing that, you know, Rhaenyra did not want to rule over what, bones and ash. And right. That's very unlike, I mean, that was the opposite of Daenerys. Daenerys snapped and became the Mad King, you know, back in Game of Thrones. And for Rhaenyra to recognize, I don't want to rule over a kingdom like that. This is not what I want to go for. And what's going to happen next? I mean, is everything out the window? What we know the Starks live. We know the Baratheons are still alive. So what happens to those houses and who falls? How does it fall? Will the dragons go through it till the end, or will the dragons going to see, wow, you humans are killing us all again. We're going to turn on you.
I have a feeling we're going to see some more connections, because one of the things I really appreciated was not a fan of the opening sequence where Rhaenyra loses the baby. That was not my favorite part of the show. However, the connection between her and her dragon as she was in severe pain, and those flashes and those moments where she's in agony and the dragon responds like it's in agony. I think there's going to be some play in that as we go forward about that true connection. And I think that whole setup with Daemon and the dragon that he went and saw, we're going to see some things where the element that we saw with the younger children losing control of their dragons, we're going to find out that there's a much deeper connection that is available to them if they can only just make it work. So,
do you think Vhagar could be taken back by Laena's daughters? Because they're still, I mean, I know they have dragons now, but since Vhagar was hers before Aemon stole him.
I don't think so, because I think that Vhagar, you know, lost his rider and then was claimed again. So I don't know if that there's that same type of connection, but I could be wrong.
Well, it was fascinating because I challenged this when Jon Snow stabbed Daenerys in the back, you know, at the end of Game of Thrones. You'd think that the dragon with their connection to Daenerys would have killed him immediately. But I think you're right. Once that connection's broken, it's like they're severed and they just kind of go off to find a new writer.
Do their own thing. Or they go wild, or they, you know, they can...
They did mention that some of the dragons were wild.
Yeah. On Dragonstone. Mm-hmm. Yes, there were several.
I'm excited for season two. I think this was an outstanding season of storytelling, of character development.
Well, we haven't done it in a while, but I really think that this show deserves a Nerd Show stamp of approval. Micah, I think it does, right?
Nerd Show stamp of approval.
Absolutely.
I like hearing that. Well, we'll be back with an all-new episode next week. Folks, have a great Halloween. Enjoy all the nerdiness, and we're going to try to find more things to review. We got our plates full, and hopefully so do you. Nerdians, you stay nerdy.